Welcome to the Skinny Podcast, where we talk all things dermatology. I'm Carol Nicotero-Ward.
And I'm Terry Rudd.
In our program, we'll talk about the recent research results in melanoma treatment and what this could mean for your patients.
How wrinkles could be an indicator of bone density.
And the newest treatment for varicose veins.
Then our cosmetic counter-host, Dr. Lily Talakoub, sheds light on the pros and cons of nanotechnology when it comes to dermatology products.
And our contributor, Dr. Alan Rockoff, talks about some very premature reports of his death. But first, let's talk about melanoma. Positive clinical trial results for new melanoma therapies could redefine the skin cancer field. Our reporter, Jeff Evans, has the latest on a drug with promising research results.
The investigational drug vemurafenib became only the second drug to extend the lives of melanoma patients in a randomized clinical study. It follows the success of the monoclonal antibody ipilimumab, known by the brand name Yervoy. We talked with medical oncologist Dr. Lynn Schuchter at the annual meeting of the American Society of Clinical Oncology to get some context for these new treatments.
Well, these new drugs are exciting and important because of their activity. And so meaning that they really have an impact and a clinical benefit for patients with advanced melanoma. And before this, the success of our therapies was really quite limited. So these new approaches, one with immunotherapy and one with targeted therapy, really makes a meaningful difference in the response rate and how patients feel after getting on these therapies.
The Phase 3 BRIM3 trial randomized patients with unresectable stage 3 or 4 melanoma and the BRAF V600E gene mutation to either vemurafenib or a standard chemotherapy drug, dacarbazine. Vemurafenib targets the BRAF V600E gene mutation that occurs in 40% to 60% of melanoma patients. A data safety monitoring board halted the trial early after an interim analysis because of the positive results seen with vemurafenib. Although a median of only 3 months of follow-up was available, the investigators estimated that at 6 months, about 84% of patients on vemurafenib would be alive, compared with 64% of patients taking the standard chemotherapy drug.
The response rate, meaning how likely is the melanoma to shrink, occurs in almost half the patients who receive the therapy. And this really is unprecedented activity.
Future studies may determine how vemurafenib could be used in combination with other drugs. Vemurafenib developer Genentech and ipilimumab manufacturer Bristol-Myers Squibb are already planning such a study.
I will test every patient with advanced melanoma to see if they have a mutated BRAF gene. If they do, and the drug is FDA approved, then that would be my first choice, to put them on vemurafenib, or more importantly, a clinical trial that looks at combination therapies.
Dr. Schuchter stressed that patient selection will be critical.
Moving from melanoma to wrinkles, Skin and Allergy News reporter Heidi Spleet has an intriguing report on the link between wrinkles and bone health.
If eyes are the window to the soul, wrinkles may be the window to bone health. That's according to data presented at this year's meeting of the Endocrine Society in Boston. In a study of 114 postmenopausal women, researchers found that women with more wrinkles also had lower bone density. The results were statistically significant. Sound far-fetched? Think again. After all, skin and bone both contain collagen. Therefore, age-related changes in collagen might affect skin as well as bone. The researchers measured bone mineral density using DEXA scanning, and they assessed skin wrinkles using a predetermined scoring system. Of course, for women whose wrinkles have been modified by fillers, peels, or surgery, this association goes out the window.
Now on to a new treatment for varicose veins that's catching on in Europe. Here's Sherry Boschert with more.
Picture a pressure cooker. Water normally boils at 100 degrees Celsius, but boiling it under pressure creates much higher temperatures, high enough to obliterate varicose veins. That's the principle behind a new endovenous ablation technique called steam vein sclerosis that's being used in Europe but isn't yet approved in the United States. One of the earliest adopters is Dr. René Milleret of Montpellier, France.
If we compare with other thermal procedures like radiofrequency or laser, first it is safer because the heat transfer to the body is very fast. So For instance, with a radio frequency probe, you remain 20 seconds at 120 degrees Celsius, which is quite a long time. And with a laser, you heat at something like 800 degrees Celsius. With steam, we heat at 122, but the heat transfer takes less than 1/10 of a second. So it's a very fast process, so that the heat remains in the vein and does not tend to go outside the vein and do problems with the nerves or the other structures. And this allows us to treat veins which are very close to the skin, which you cannot do with other techniques, because we have no risk of skin burns.
A pilot study that used steam ablation on 20 saphenous veins in 19 patients found that 65% of the veins were totally occluded 6 months later. The study's Dutch investigators reported their results at the World Congress of Dermatology. But Dr. Milleray, who consults for Serma, a manufacturer of the steam system, says the results could have been better if they had used an optimal dose of steam. Dr. Milleray will publish findings from his own study later this year, and he says steam treatment is similar to laser or radiofrequency ablation.
So it's quite comparable at 1 year with the other techniques, and my personal result at 3 years comparable too with other thermal techniques.
Dr. Milleray isn't the only one who sees promise in this treatment. Dr. Margaret Mann is Chief of Clinical Services in Dermatology at the University of California, Irvine, and a consultant to MERS Aesthetics, which makes a sclerotherapy agent.
Depending on how the studies will pan out, I think it's going to be, number one, cheaper for physicians because it utilizes steam and not laser or specific fiber that's necessary. Secondly, I think it's going to be just as effective, and it's going to be a lot quicker. So less time in the operating room really translates to a procedure that's going to be cheaper for patients. I think because of all those reasons, it's going to give the current technology a run for its money.
Moving on to our monthly feature, Cosmetic Counter. This month, Dr. Lily Talakoub talks about nanotechnology.
The growing field of nanotechnology basically holds great potential for skincare products, as well as a few concerns that have recently been highlighted in the media. Dermatologists have been using many of these technologies in the last several years, both in the treatment of skin conditions such as melanoma, as well as other products that we use, such as sunscreens and cosmetics, on a day-to-day basis, and drugs that we administer to the skin. For example, the ingredients in sunscreens that provide this broad-spectrum coverage is avobenzone. This makes sunscreen greasy and difficult to blend. In addition, similar things like titanium dioxide gives a white residue when applied to the skin. When these ingredients are actually converted to nanoparticles, they become less greasy and leave the skin residue-free while retaining their broad-spectrum properties. Similar technologies are being used to deliver melanoma treatment, antioxidants to the skin, as well as medications to the skin. However, because the skin is the first line of defense, many dermatologists have concerns about the potential risk of nanotechnology. Considerable research on these nanoparticles on healthy, undamaged skin has actually shown that the skin is an effective barrier to preventing the entry of nanoparticles into both the deeper layers of the skin and into the blood. The FDA, though, is currently investigating the safety of nanoparticles for skincare products because materials developed in the nanoscale dimension can have different chemical, physical, as well as biologic properties. The FDA has now proposed guidelines for the use and development of nanotechnology and is actually coordinating policy changes with regards to its safety. What I tell my patients is sunscreens with nanoparticles actually provide better UV coverage than ones without. So sunscreens that have nanoparticles are known to show better effects at a known carcinogen, which is UV radiation, and the studies of their harmful effects are unknown. So it's better to use something with better sunscreen and better UV protection because the known carcinogen, which is UV, is protected better with the nanoparticles. In addition, medications like retinoids are usually used in nanoparticle size because they provide less irritation. So we can get more medication and patients tolerate it better than ones without nanoparticles. So my recommendation is the cosmetic skincare moisturizer sunscreens that we do recommend to our patients are actually in both a better format, more elegant to put on the skin, and work better than ones without nanotechnology.
And now, from his office in Brookline, Massachusetts, Dr. Alan Rockoff shares the story of meeting a new patient who was glad to see he was still around, despite a report to the contrary.
"How did you get my name?" I asked. "My sister came here 10 years ago," she said. "She used to be a patient of Dr. Alvin Sherwin. I took over Dr. Sherwin's practice when he moved to Florida," I told her. "That was in 1981, so it's closer to 30 years ago, not 10. "My goodness," she said, "that explains what my sister said." "What did your sister say?" "Well, my mother found your name on a piece of paper. My mother likes to hold on to things." "I'll say she does," I said. "She said, why don't you call this guy Rockoff? He took care of your sister. He's very good. So I looked you up and found your office." "Anyway," she continued, "when I told my sister that I found you, she said, yes, I remember seeing him. You mean he's still around? After all these years, I figured he was probably dead." "Well," I said, "not yet. This is Dr. Alan Rockoff, alive for the time being."
Well, that's all for now. I'm Carol Nicotero Ward with the Skinny on Dermatology News from around the world.
And I'm Terry Rudd. For more news and information, visit us online at skinandallergynews.com and be sure to sign up for our newsletter.